This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and we'll welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our title this week is God of the Oppressors versus God of the Oppressed and the Sermon on the Mount. Our feature text is going to be Matthew 5, 1 through 11, where it says, "When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you, persecute you, and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." I'm just coming back from actually 10 days in Capolet, where I spent 2 weekends with our heart group there. And on my way back on the plane, I want to try to share with you this week just a little bit of the introspections that I went through. It was about a 10-hour flight on the way back, and that gives you a lot of time to think. And during that time, I was thinking about the Hawaiians of the Hawaiian Islands and the beautiful culture with rich narratives, just beautiful stories that I was privileged just to taste a small part of while I was there. And then I was also contemplating the Maoris of New Zealand, and I had the privilege of just briefly learning about them this summer while I was in Christchurch. And I was thinking about almost a decade ago now, I spent about 3 weeks in Trinidad and Tobago, where I learned about the warrior Caribs and the peace-loving Arawaks. And from all of that, my mind went to American and British colonialism, European and American capitalism. And then I started to think about the Jewish people of the first century under Rome, and then further back to the exiled Jews that were taken captive and ruled over by the superpowers of their day, like Babylon and Greece. And then the Hebrews, who even further back served basically as sweatshop workers in their day under the Egyptian Empire. And lastly, I thought of Abel under the raised fist of Cain. And what I came to the conclusion of is that there's always been, for as long as anyone can remember, there's always been a top and there's always been a bottom. There's always been a conqueror and a conquered, always an oppressor and an oppressed. And the schools that I attended, they taught me the historical narratives, the histories of those who had won, the oppressors, the conquerors. But I can't help think, especially as I've just bumped into, again, the stories of the Hawaiian people, I can't help think that those that are on the bottom and those that have lost, that they have their narratives too. There's a history to be told from their perspective as well. If the narratives of the Abels and the Josephs and the Jobs and the Hebrews are whispering anything to us in the scriptures, they're calling to us softly to listen to the stories of those who have been conquered, those on the bottom, those that are not in a position of privilege. And the resurrection as God's response over against the unjust crucifixion of Jesus on a Roman cross, the resurrection testifies that although Jesus as God loved both the oppressor and the oppressed and was seeking to restore them both, this God seeks to accomplish this restoration of all things through standing in solidarity with the oppressed over against the oppression that's being carried out by those in positions of privilege. Think about it for just a moment this week. The Egyptians had their gods, and the Babylonians had theirs, and the Greeks had their gods, and the Greek gods would become much more violent versions with just different names under Rome. But these were the gods of the conquerors. These were the gods of the people on top. And let me try to make this clear. With the exception of when Israel rebelled by wanting to have a king, the God of the Hebrew narrative is a God not of the superpowers, but of the oppressed, the wanderers, the nomads. Historically, the European conquerors, too, they had their God, just as America today has hers. But here is the catch, and I don't even know if you caught the switch just now. A sleight of hand has occurred. In the 4th century, something mysterious took place. There was nothing really magical about it, but it was more like a charlatan move, much more like the actions of magicians who stand on stages and waving their trick wands and pulling rabbits out of trick hats. Christianity in the 4th century was subverted by a Roman emperor and wedded to the empire. And I'm not sure we even realize what really happened with this. Overnight, the god of the oppressed became the god of the oppressor. The Hebrew narrative of the god who stands in solidarity with those who suffer at the hands of others, it was subverted, and the narrative was now replaced or eclipsed by a god with the same name, but a very different disposition. Now God stood on the God of the scriptures stood on the side of Rome and conquered and oppressed and violated through Rome. And think about how those who are oppressed today by the American empire see America as a Christian nation. The lens that you use when discussing God makes a huge difference. And as you have to ask yourself the question, are you contemplating God as the one who is standing in solidarity with the oppressors? Or are you contemplating God as the one who stands in solidarity with the oppressed? And when you enter into ontological debates about God and you're asking questions about the existence of God, you have to ask, are you asking questions about the existence of the God of the conquerors or the God of those who are being conquered? And we don't want our God, any of us, we don't want our God to be a conquered God, the God of the conquered people. We want a strong God, one who's never defeated. But that's exactly where we miss the point. The God that we find in the Jesus story is a God who stands in solidarity with the losers of the war games that we humans continually play. And this is the point that many of my atheist friends miss. Now, not all of my atheist friends, and I want to give a shout out to Ryan Bell this week as well. I don't know if Ryan, after this year, will stay with his atheism or where he'll go from this. But Ryan is at least today an atheist friend of mine who gets what I'm about to say. What I've encountered without exception in every one of my atheist friends is that their atheism is really rooted in a deep concern about matters of justice. Their atheism is simply an expression of a much deeper revolt within themselves against injustice and therefore the God of those who perpetuate injustice. And this has to be recognized, acknowledged, and honored. As a Jesus follower myself, I find that this hunger and thirst for justice by my atheist friends is actually in perfect harmony with the ethics that I have found were taught by the Jesus of the Jesus story. You can see that in Matthew 5:6. But what many of my atheist friends do miss is that most of their arguments against God are built on a foundational assumption that the God of the Jesus story is also the God of those that are on top. And Dr. Martin Luther King's God and Gandhi's God looked very different from the European American Christian God many of us wrongly believe is really out there. And let me make this clear. I think the atheists are right. The European American God who stands in solidarity with the superpowers of this planet does not exist. That God is not out there. And saying that doesn't make me an atheist. I simply agree that the God my friends say isn't there really isn't. And it's no wonder that the fruit of the God of the West, the God of the European conquerors, the God of America, given enough time, it leaves people hungering and thirsting for justice and wanting nothing to do with God. The God that we find in the Jesus of the Jesus story is a divine parent of us all, oppressed as well as the oppressor. This God is a radically inclusive God who loves all and is seeking to restore all. Yet it's a God who does this through standing in solidarity with those who are at the bottom of our systems of oppression, seeking to awaken the hearts of the oppressors and inspire them to escape their systemic injustice and to stand in solidarity with the oppressed as well. This is the story of Saul of Tarsus, even. And let me say a word about monotheism, too, while I'm here. Monotheism, within the context of Jews, Christians, and Muslims who are endeavoring to conquer others, it looks very different when it champions the supreme and only God of the oppressors than when it portrays the one and only God who stands in solidarity with those who are being oppressed or conquered. In other words, monotheism, and I have many friends who are not monotheists as well, but monotheism can be one of the most destructive isms in the hands of those that are on top, that are the conquerors. But for monotheism to be properly evaluated as whether it's intrinsically harmful or not, we have to ask ourselves whether we're talking about a monotheism in the hands of the conquerors who are saying that no other gods exist but ours, or is it a monotheism in the hands of those who are being oppressed, which gives hope to those that are oppressed, whispering that the oppressors, what the oppressors call their god, is not really a god at all. That this is not about theistic debates, in other words. It's about the god or gods of the oppressors, the gods that the oppressors are claiming is on their side, over and against the god that those who are being oppressed believe is the only true god who is actually standing with them in their position of being oppressed. And today it's pointless to argue about the superiority of your religion or of your god over and against another person's if both of these religions worship the god or gods of the oppressors. And this leads me to the inescapable conclusion, I don't know how to get away from this, that the Christian God of the conquering West is not the God we find in the Jesus story. The Christian God that many of us have worshiped all of our lives really doesn't exist. That God is really... it's not out there. Again, believing this doesn't make me an atheist. I simply see a radical difference in the God of the oppressors and the God the Jesus story claimed really was out there, who was actually standing in solidarity with the Abels, the Josephs, the Hebrews, the Jews, the first century Christians who were persecuted by both Judaism and Rome, the Anabaptists of the 16th century, the Hawaiians, the Caribs, the Arawaks, the Moris, even against the colonial missionaries who carried crosses, a God who stands in solidarity with Native Americans against European colonialism, a God who stands in solidarity with African Americans, a God who stands in solidarity with women, the poor, and anyone who's considered today as non-normative. Also, I want to add one last thing, and I think many people miss this. Whatever your theistic beliefs are, as a follower of Jesus, I have to continually remind myself that in our work against injustice, I'm not striving for a world where room is made at the top of a pyramid of oppression for more people who were once oppressed themselves. The God of the Jesus story is not asking for those at the top to make more room for others at the top. This God is calling those at the top of the pyramid to abandon their positions at the top in order to stand in solidarity and give a voice to those at the bottom. The God of the Jesus story is calling for the entire pyramid of oppression to be disassembled one human heart at a time. And this God is asking for the entire edifice to come crumbling down as human beings begin to see that there is no more us and them. There's only us sitting side by side around a shared table as brothers and sisters of the same divine parents once again. And for those of you who are interested, I've included a few of my thoughts on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount this week too. And this is the sermon that actually changed my life. It's the sermon that I believe has the power to heal the world. And at the end of these brief comments, I want to try to lay out a project for you that I'm working on presently. And I know that at this stage it's oversimplified and it's very incomplete, but what I'm doing is I'm opening a window into my own headspace for those of you who have the courage to look inside there. And what I want you to see through this project is that it's not just our ideas about God that are affected when we see God through the resurrection standing in solidarity with the oppressed. The gospel, too, is radically impacted. The gospel preached by the oppressors, the powerful, the privileged in European, American colonialism and capitalism, this gospel is significantly different from the gospel that we find the Jesus of the Jesus story teaching. It's very different from the gospel of the oppressed. And I've included a few blank spaces at the end for you to make your own comparisons. But again, this is a work in progress. It's not completed. It's not a finished product. It's ongoing, and this is a very rough draft of it. But if you have some comparisons that you feel should be added, shoot me an email, and I would be most interested in hearing those and possibly adding them to this list as well. But for those of you who've already been listening long enough, I'm going to sign off and let you go. Following this sign-off is my thoughts on the Sermon on the Mount, and then that comparison. For those of you who are checking out at this stage, keep living in love, loving like Jesus, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love each one of you, and remember that God does too. Now, for those of you who are going to continue to listen, here are some of my musings on the Sermon on the Mount this week. Matthew 5:3, it says, "When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.'" The poor in Jesus' day were one of the groups who were considered to be living contrary to the Torah and who were therefore being punished by God. The poor were oppressed and marginalized by the rich, and rather than feeling compassion for the poor, those who were better off simply felt morally superior. Why else would God be blessing them economically while withholding blessing from others? And to be poor in spirit simply meant that you stood in solidarity in spirit with the poor, those who were economically oppressed. This kingdom Jesus had come to establish, it would readjust how life operates on planet Earth in a way that would be especially good news for the poor in the present arrangement. Jesus' kingdom of redistribution of resources would be impossibly difficult for the wealthy to accept, but it was good news to the poor and to anyone who stood in solidarity in spirit with the poor. Matthew 4:5-7 says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy." This kingdom that Jesus had come to establish, it would bless those who were mourning because of the present distribution. The meek were those who had been trampled on by the powerful and the privileged in the present distribution. And those who were hungering and thirsting for justice, those who were being oppressed by the powerful and the privileged class, they are the ones who were given hope by this coming of Jesus' kingdom. Matthew 5:8-9, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God." The pure in heart are those who do not allow what they're suffering at the hands of the powerful and the privileged to cause them to resort to impure methods of redistribution. The peacemakers are the ones who participate in Jesus's non-violent way of establishing justice once again on the earth. And verses 10 and 11 says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." Those who stand in solidarity with the oppressed, whether it be in matters of economics or any other area where people are being marginalized, matters of gender or age, both young and old, race, orientation, whoever stands in solidarity with the oppressed, they will be persecuted, they will be hated, they will be reviled, and they will be spoken against as evil by the powerful who feel that their position of privilege is being threatened by Jesus' kingdom. And finally, in verse 12, Jesus said, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." The prophets have always called for injustice, oppression, and violence on the earth to be made right. In Isaiah 58:6, it says, "Is not this the fast that I chose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke." Amos 5:24, Amos says, "Let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an eternal flowing stream." Here's the comparison. This is going to take just a minute to get through, but I have two columns. I know you're listening to this, but if you can picture this in your head, I have two columns. The first column is called God of the Oppressors. The second column is called God of the Oppressed. And I'm just going to go through a few comparisons and go back and forth between these two. And I'll try to make this, for those of you who are not visualizing it, as clear as possible. For those of you who this is unclear, I want to encourage you to go check out this week's eSight on Renewed Heart Ministries website, where it's laid out for you in a visual format that makes more sense. But the first comparison is the gospel of the oppressors. Is the gospel is first and foremost that God loves me. And me is meaning those who are in a position of privilege. For the God of the oppressed, the gospel is the entire Jesus story, which climaxes in the revelation that this Jesus, whom the oppressors crucified, God has raised back to life, and this Jesus is Lord. God of the oppressors, the gospel is about postmortem assurance, about things like getting to heaven or escaping hell. This is what keeps those who are being oppressed in line, because they're looking forward to a reward after this life. The gospel of the oppressed is about Jesus's egalitarian kingdom being restored on earth in the here and in the now, healing the world, making all injustice, oppression, and violence right. You can find that in Matthew 6:10. God of the oppressors focuses on that gospel focuses on proving the historicity of story details within the Jesus story. The God of the oppressed focuses on demonstrating the intrinsic value of the ethical teachings of Jesus. And God of the oppressors focuses on a private personal relationship with God that is inwardly focused. The God of the oppressed is an ever deepening encounter with God that focuses one outside of oneself towards present restoration in the here and in the now. God of the oppressors is focused on hierarchical authority structures. The God of the oppressed is focused on a mutual egalitarian community. God of the oppressors, justice is punitive, was satisfied by Jesus on the cross. God of the oppressed, justice is restorative, and it was initiated, begun, started, commenced, instituted, launched, set in motion, established, founded, brought in, however you want to say it, ushered in, introduced once again, inaugurated on earth by Jesus through the power of his death and resurrection over against the powers of injustice, violence, and oppression. And God of the oppressors has an in this gospel, they have an aversion to justice, and they focus on mercy, grace, and forgiveness instead. God of the oppressed is deeply focused on, their gospel is deeply focused on justice and the restoration which is promised for the oppressed. For the first gospel, being God of the oppressors, justice is seen as standing in opposition to mercy and love. Where God of the oppressed, justice is the natural expression of mercy and love. God of the oppressors, mercy, grace, and forgiveness are things that we receive from God that give us postmortem assurance. God of the oppressed, mercy and grace and forgiveness come from God still, but they are what we are called to show our fellow humans who are oppressing us. God of the oppressors, the eschatological focus, end time events focus, is on the destruction of the world and being a part of an elite special privileged group that escape. And God of the oppressed is a end times eschatological focus on a renewed and restored heaven, reunited with a renewed and restored earth. And God of the oppressors, the fire in the end is punitive and retributive. God of the oppressed, the fire is restorative. God of the oppressors, the focus of evangelism is on the threat of hell, the reward of heaven, and the love of God in saving humanity from God's imposed punishment. God of the oppressed, the evangelism focuses on instead putting on display the beauty of what the world changed by Jesus and his teachings actually looks like, in recognizing and honoring this beauty already at work in some, and endeavoring to inspire those in whom this beauty is not present to join the revolution. God of the oppressors focuses on enemies getting their due or vengeance. God of the oppressed focuses on enemies who being won and restored along with the restoration of justice to the oppressed. The gospel that's found in the God of the oppressors, violence is an acceptable means of maintaining and preserving a position of privilege. God of the oppressed, nonviolent direct action, rooted in enemy love, is the means of saving even our oppressors from systemic injustice. God of the oppressors, salvation means being allowed into heaven by ontological certitude, in other words, being certain of what exists and what is true and what doesn't and is not. God of the oppressed, salvation is seen as the healing and restoration of this world, which all are invited to participate in. And we have three more. God of the oppressors, human suffering is a huge philosophical problem for a God who is in control. God of the oppressed, human suffering is a tangible and formable enemy that God is working to bring to an end. God of the oppressors, a God who desires sacrifice, rooted in sociological scapegoating. And God of the oppressed, a God who never desired or required sacrifice, but desires for us to follow the way of mercy instead. That's Matthew 9:13 and Matthew 12:7. And then lastly, God of the oppressors claims that God is love, but this means something very different for the oppressors. And the gospel, according to the oppressed, is also God is love, but that phrase means something very different for the oppressed. Heart group application this week. Spend some time this week sitting with Jesus, contemplating these above comparisons, and journal what Jesus brings to your mind, other passages, questions and stories, thoughts and insights. And then lastly, share with your heart group whatever it is that Jesus shows you this upcoming week and your time of just sitting with him and contemplating these. Again, this is just a comparison between the God of the oppressors versus the God of the oppressed, and how that comparison is born out of the Sermon on the Mount. Wherever this finds you, again, keep living in love, loving like Jesus, again, until the only world that remains is a world where Christ's love reigns. I love you guys. See you next week.